Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we are turning our attention to transplants and zeroing in on lung and pancreas transplants with our guests today from UW Health. One of them, Dr. John Odorico, is a general surgeon who specializes in kidney, pancreas, and islet cell transplant surgeries. Dr. Odorico, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Larry.
Great to have you here, and great to have Dr. Aaron Lowry with us as well, medical director of the UW Health Lung Transplant Program. Dr. Aaron Lowry, thank you for joining in.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
As we talk with our guests today, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you received an organ donation, or have received a transplanted organ from a donor. Maybe that experience was great. Was it? Give us a call and let us know. Is a loved one scheduled for an organ transplant soon? Want to hear from you. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm sure that in your line of work, you hear a lot of stories from people who have either given or received an organ. And I know we're going to hear from some callers this hour who are going to want to share their stories. But before we do that, I'm wondering if you can talk about the kinds of stories you hear on a day-to-day basis. Any story that really sticks out with you? I'll ask you both, but Dr. Aaron Lowry, start with you.
You know, the journey for transplant is a process, and for each individual patient, it's going to be unique, and it's going to be different. It's going to be their own journey. There's always going to be ups and downs throughout the course. There's going to be setbacks, and there's going to be great leaps ahead. What we hope for every patient who goes through the transplant process is that they're able to achieve their goals and the quality of life that they're seeking, to be able to participate in family events, in their community, spend more time with friends and family, and really get back to enjoying life.
Yeah, it makes sense. Dr. Odorico, a comment?
Well, we've heard some great stories over the years, Larry, as well. And patients are really engaged in their care, and then oftentimes would like to meet their donor family. And that is possible and is a really rewarding and meaningful experience for patients and the donor families. We've heard stories, many stories over the years about that. Patients are often living longer and longer after transplant. It's getting safer and safer. The outcomes are better and better as years go on. And, with patients, getting a chance to meet their family, they can celebrate their 10th, 15th, 25th year anniversary after transplant, which is really phenomenal. Having a chance to live a more fulfilled life.
It is indeed. And here you are, both part of nationally ranked transplant programs. And it was just some amazing figures on the success of both of these programs. What's the, it's got to be super important to have programs like yours in Wisconsin?
Yes. I mean, what it is it provides an opportunity for patients to achieve the best possible outcomes. In particularly with the pancreas transplant program, we've been a consistently high-performing program, and this is not the first time we've had accolades in terms of quality and excellence. In fact, in 2019, we received the Interlink Center of Excellence Award for a top-performing pancreas transplant program by their holistic criteria in 2019. So, but what it does is give patients confidence that they are going to have success. You know, with any major surgery like a transplant, there is a lot of anxiety, There's a lot of fear about what might happen. It's complicated in terms of the surgery and managing patients. And we have an army of team managing patients, but having success gives them, the patients, the confidence and relieves their anxiety after a transplant that they're going to have an excellent outcome.
Yeah, it's amazing. Dr. Lowry, you know, I it's hard for me to imagine somebody saying to me, you need a lung transplant. That is about as scary a prospect as I can almost think of. What are you doing better than other programs? You obviously are.
Well, Larry, you're right. Hearing that message, you need a lung transplant, is kind of a life changing event for our patients. Really can be very scary. It could be a period of time where patients are in denial or scared or hesitate just because of the gravity of the situation, how big of an operation and how big of an endeavor it can be. However, what our team strives to do is really approach each individual patient and help them walk through the journey. So we partner with the patient and their family and try and demystify the process and make it less scary, more accessible, and are there for them to explain every step of the way. Focusing on, optimizing their condition before, before we even get to the surgery. Can we physically get a little bit stronger, better nutrition, better mental health support? All of those things are important going into the surgery so that they face less complications after the surgery. It all comes down to the team, though. It takes a village to get through transplant.
Yeah.
We do a great job of having that village to support the patient and their family through the process.
I'm going to ask you both this, but what conditions lead to someone needing, since we're talking with you, Dr. Lowry, let's just talk about lungs for a minute. What conditions lead someone needing a lung transplant?
So the most common indications are pulmonary disease that result in lung transplant include idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, interstitial lung disease, emphysema or COPD, and bronchiectasis, cystic fibrosis, along with that bronchiectasis, although the need in that population has gone down with some of the newer treatments, and then also pulmonary hypertension. Those are the most common indications.
Yeah. Thinking back to my grade school days with one of my friends in grade school, his sister had cystic fibrosis. And at that point, there wasn't a whole lot of hope.
Yeah, there was a new treatment that came out the end of 2019 that has really changed everything for CF patients. It's quite miraculous. The need for transplant has gone down drastically in that population. And the average median survival for a patient born today is in the 60s, so in the mid-60s.
Amazing. Well, what about pancreas transplant? What causes a person, or what causes are there that result in a person needing a pancreas transplant?
Excellent question, Larry. It's generally speaking diabetes. Now, there are many forms of diabetes. The most common indication is type 1 diabetes. These are patients who have early onset autoimmune diabetes. But type 2 diabetes is increasingly becoming an indication for patients who also have kidney failure and type 2 diabetes. There are other forms of diabetes, though, and we're pretty agnostic when it comes to offering a pancreas transplant for a patient with diabetes as to the cause. It doesn't really matter. Is if they're on insulin, then they very well may be eligible for a pancreas transplant. Another indication is if they've had their pancreas removed due to chronic pancreatitis and surgery or trauma. They are brittle diabetics, and they can have a pancreas transplant as well. And we've done it for that indication. So if a patient has loss of their awareness of their low blood sugars, our typical symptoms are sweatiness, tremulousness. But if patients pass out or have accidents or seizures due to low blood sugars, because of reduced awareness of the symptoms that come along with that, which tends to happen over time, then they are eligible for a pancreas transplant. If they're not doing well on insulin pumps and modern sensor technology as well, in general, if they just have severely erratic blood sugars that are and experiencing frequent lows or highs, emergency room visits or hospitalizations or the like, then they may be eligible. Now, the most common type of pancreas transplant is done in combination with a kidney transplant. And that's because diabetes is the leading cause of kidney disease in the United States. Those are called simultaneous pancreas kidney transplants. Same donor offers and provides, same deceased donor provides a kidney and a pancreas transplant, one kidney. And that's the most common type of pancreas transplant in the United States. The other types are a sequential pancreas after kidney transplant, meaning the patient had kidney failure in the first place, got a kidney transplant from a deceased donor or living donor, and then subsequently thereafter, if doing well, got a pancreas alone transplant. And the other, the last indication, which is one we're specialized in, and is about half our transplants this past year, pancreas transplants, is those patients with normal kidney function who have severe hypoglycemic events, hypoglycemic unawareness. That means they can't sense their low blood sugars, not doing well on pump and sensor technology. And they have normal kidney function again, but and are only eligible for a pancreas alone transplant. So those are the three different types of transplants, and those are the eligibility criteria.
Oh, excellent. And on the lung side, the lung transplant side, Dr. Lowry, could you talk about that side?
So in terms of who's eligible?
Yeah.
Really anyone that is requiring oxygen due to lung disease is who we're looking to consider for lung transplant. So you need to have advanced lung disease. Typically, patients are being seen by a pulmonologist, but they might be seeing their primary care doctor for their lung disease and have exhausted all treatment options. We do like to see patients earlier on. So if you're on oxygen or it's been recognized that you have advanced lung disease and are considering lung transplant, that's the time to meet with the lung transplant team to learn about all of what is involved in lung transplant. It's a lot to learn about, and there's a lot to work on in preparing for the lung transplant surgery. So you want to get that started as soon as possible after recognizing that your lung disease is advanced and it's not going to get any better.
Mm. Taking a look today at pancreas transplants and at lung transplants with our two guests, Dr. Aaron Lowry and Dr. John Odorico from the University of Wisconsin Health. It's great to have them with us. And questions for them, you can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to talk@WPR.org. Have you been a donor? Have you received a transplant? We'd love to hear your experiences. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here visiting today with Dr. Aaron Lowry, Medical Director of the UW Health Lung Transplant Program, and Dr. John Odorico, who is General Surgeon at UW Health. He specializes in kidney, pancreas, and islet transplant surgeries. It's great to have them with us today. And certainly, if you have a question, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. And let's take a call. Cindy in Stevens Point, we'll go to you. Cindy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. Question. In pancreas problems, if someone has pancreatic cancer, is a transplant ever an option?
So if someone has pancreatic cancer, is a pancreas transplant an option?
Thank you for that question, Cindy. The answer is generally no, but we'd certainly be willing to investigate further for that patient, particular patient. The reason is that pancreatic cancer is generally diagnosed late in life and with and is often fairly advanced at the time of diagnosis with a poor prognosis. The question is not diabetes then, it's really cancer, and it just happens to be in the pancreas. So this is a common misnomer that a pancreas transplant is to replace a pancreas with cancer, but then the essential problem is the immunosuppressive medications can make the cancer grow faster and make it more difficult to treat. And with it already being advanced, it's generally not an indication. If there is a total pancreatectomy for a benign tumor of the pancreas and the patient is rendered cancer-free for a number of years and is a brittle diabetic, then they may be eligible for a pancreas transplant. But that's a pretty unique and unusual situation. It's generally type 1 or type 2 diabetes. Oh. But thank you for the question.
Yeah, thank you, Cindy, for that question. Michael emailed us. He's identified on his driver's license as an organ donor. Also think about donating his body to a medical school or other scientific use. Will his body be accepted if pieces are missing from prior donations to others in need of certain parts, or would he need to stop being an organ donor first? Interesting question. Dr. Lowry, have you got an idea on that one?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Michael. I think it's always important to bring awareness to organ donation. And so if you want to be an organ donor, important to let your friends and family know that and also sign your organ donation on your license. Typically at the time of your demise, it's at that point that they're testing the organs to see if they're healthy enough for use during transplant. And so rest assured that at that time, those sort of decisions will be made. There are many patients that maybe, the lungs might not be able to be donated, but there are other things such as the kidney or tissue or cornea that can be donated. There's a very individualized approach to organ and tissue donation.
Chris in Spooner has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you. Our three-year-old granddaughter was very recently diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and they're going through the process. She has an insulin pump now, and she, of course, has a monitor. I'm wondering what, in the future, is there a chance for an islet cell transplant, or how would that work? Is there anything in the works?
And maybe before we even get in, Chris will certainly answer that question, but Dr. Odorico, maybe the UW Health Transplant Center is the only center in Wisconsin and one of the few in the nation performing islet cell transplantation or pancreatectomy, I think, transplantation. Maybe explain that procedure and then relate to Chris's question about her child, her grandchild.
Sure. Well, yes. So we are the only center in Wisconsin and one of few in the nation that are performing what's called a total pancreatectomy with autologous islet transplantation. This involves removing the pancreas due for chronic pain and chronic pancreatitis, and then infusing the islets after extracting them in the laboratory, infusing them back into the patient. So this is for patients that have chronic pancreatitis and chronic pain, but do not want to be rendered insulin dependent or diabetic after their removal of the pancreas. So this is a little bit different than what the caller is asking.
Okay.
Her daughter has autoimmune diabetes at a very young age. She's very fortunate to have access to pump and sensor technology, which is the state of the art, and I strongly encourage her to continue to use those technologies to the best of her ability and the best of the technology's ability and optimize her care with avoiding highs and lows and using the technology to achieve a hemoglobin A1C or glycated hemoglobin in the target range that the American Diabetes Association and other associations recommend. This will keep her out of harm's way as she becomes a young adult, and in terms of minimizing her risk for kidney disease, eye disease, nerve disease, et cetera. The question specifically was about islet transplantation, and I think that refers to islet allotransplantation. That is an islet from a cadaver donor, a deceased donor. Those, unfortunately, are not very common in the United States because insurance companies don't pay for it yet and Medicare doesn't pay for it. It may be coming down the road in the near future. It's much more commonly delivered in other countries where there's universal health care, Canada, the UK, other centers in Europe, other countries in Europe and Australia. Unfortunately, in the United States, for a variety of reasons, it's not very common for allo islet transplantation. However, I'll say there's quite a bit of promise on the horizon for stem cell-derived islets. And we are the only center in Wisconsin offering that therapy as part of a study and a clinical trial and an investigation. It's not proven therapy at the moment, but we have two patients that are now off insulin, having received that therapy. And this is really quite promising, I think, and is something these patients are grateful for, and patients are excited about. It does not apply for children yet, so that hopefully will be coming down the road.
Okay, Chris, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Kathy in Middleton next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Larry. This is only somewhat related. I have a very close friend who is about to have a bone marrow transplant. Now, he lives in Milwaukee, and I live in Middleton, so, of course, there's a distance there. What can I do as a friend to help him?
All right. Emotionally supporting someone going through a transplant. Well, Dr. Lowry, let's have you address that to begin with.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. I think that's a great question. Friends and family members of patients undergoing transplant, no matter what that transplant is, need a lot of support during that period of time. And so there's probably a lot that you can do. One, I would start by asking your friend, what would be the most helpful way? I want to support your journey through transplant. Give me some ideas. What are you struggling with that I might be able to take off your plate? Sometimes that's as easy as, hey, you know what? I have these plants at my house that need to be watered, and I'm going to be, you know, getting a transplant. So can you help me with some of this housework that needs to be done, or some meals, providing some meals, or gathering some funds together? Oftentimes patients have to relocate to a transplant center, and that is can be expensive. And so fundraising and pooling some funds together, getting some meals, getting some housework done is usually some of the best ways to help support friends and family going through transplant.
Yeah, there you go, Kathy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. Joyce called, couldn't stay with us. She wants to thank the doctors who helped out her brother with a double lung transplant. They also did a great job of educating the family, Dr. Lowry.
Well, great. Family support is so vital to make lung transplant a success.
So double lung, I mean, are there single lung transplants?
Yeah. So there is either single lung, one lung transplant, or two lungs. It's not well known that people only need one good lung to survive and have a good quality of life, actually. If you have one good lung, it does the job of exchanging oxygen and carbon dioxide. And we have many patients who received one lung and are alive 15, 20 years later on that one good lung. So the decision whether to pursue one lung or two lung is made after you go through evaluation testing for transplant. So you get lots of different tests and consults that show us how is your heart and lungs working. And if it is favorable to receive one lung, that might be an option for you. The surgery itself is a little easier, so therefore the recovery is a little quicker.
How long would you have to wait for a lung or a pair of lungs? I mean, what's the wait time? I'm going to ask Dr. Oderico, too, about pancreas as well, but let's go to the stay with the lungs for a minute.
So at UW Health, we have the quickest wait time in the country. Our average wait list time right now is 12 days waiting for a lung transplant. That will vary depending on your unique patient factors, particularly blood type and height that go into sizing the organ. At UW Health, we're fortunate that our patients are able to get transplanted quickly. Usually with lung, patients are pretty sick going into the transplant. So getting that transplant quickly helps them do better after transplant.
And are they receiving lungs just from Wisconsin folks?
No. Right. That's a great question, Larry. Actually, the lungs come from all over the country. We have an allocation system now that's called continuous distribution. So you are on a national wait list, and the surgeons go out for the lungs and bring them back quickly and do the transplant surgery.
No, it's really great. I didn't realize it would be that short of a time period. Dr. Oderico, what about on the pancreas side?
Yes, so we have among the shortest wait times, if not the shortest wait time in the country as well. You can get your transplant faster here in Wisconsin at our program, UW Health Transplant Program. Not only were we the top-ranked pancreas program for survival, but also for getting the transplant faster. It's important to know, though, that wait times can vary a little bit by blood type and by how sensitized a patient is. That is, if they have antibodies to other donors from either transfusions, transplants, or pregnancies. So that can increase their wait time, but on average, it's 4 to 5 months. At other programs, regionally or nationally, it can be years and years. We do not want patients, and neither do they, want to sit on the waiting list, waiting a long period of time and possibly succumbing to other problems. So we are very interested in transplanting patients fast and getting their transplant fast, and I think they appreciate that as well. One other point I'd mention is that if a patient is on another waiting list and they're waiting and waiting, they can be dual listed. What that means is that they can get on more than one list. Insurance generally pays for that. so they could be listed in anywhere else in the country and on our list as well. And one of the reasons, as Dr. Lowry mentioned, is that why we have short wait times is for the same reason. We've been importing pancreases from all over the country through the allocation system for years, not just relying on our own organs. And that shortens waiting times for patients. So we've been importing pancreases for patients with diabetes on our program ever since 1997. So quite a long period of time.
Indeed. Roxy, relating to pancreas, Roxy emailed us and says, how come a person that who has had a pancreas transplant have to be on prednisone, but a kidney transplant, you don't need prednisone?
Well, that's not necessarily the case. More and more now, we are doing pancreas transplants with two anti-rejection medicines with what's called early steroid withdrawal or steroid-free protocols. So that is possible these days. And where it wasn't possible 10, 15 years ago, it is now.
Jane in Sun Prairie, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question for regarding lung transplants. I'm 74 years old. I recently got a diagnosis of bronchiectasis. In addition to my already established diagnosis of asthma, and with the bronchiectasis, that's just really giving me difficulty to breathe. What is the likelihood that I could receive a lung transplant for my bronchiectasis?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So bronchiectasis is a disease that is near and dear to my heart. It is one of the diseases that I focus on. And so first and foremost, you want to make sure that your disease is being treated optimally, that you've got all of the therapies on board for bronchiectasis. And so making sure that your pulmonologist understands what all of the latest therapies are for bronchiectasis and that you're doing those as optimally as possible. After that, if it appears your lung disease is continuing to advance and you're needing support from oxygen or other devices that support your breathing, that's when we think about transplant for bronchiectasis. So in those cases, in order to understand if you're eligible for lung transplant, you need to meet with the lung transplant team. And so we do consult visits to start things off just so that we can get to know the patient and the patient can get to know us to understand would they be eligible and what would it take in order to qualify for a transplant itself.
Jane, does that help?
That helps. And where would I start? Who would I call to start this process?
Yeah. So if you're interested in looking up bronchiectasis experts, you can look at the UW Health website to look at the various pulmonologists there who specialize in bronchiectasis. And for lung transplant consults, there is actually a place on our website where patients can self-refer, and then a member of our team will give you a call back to start off the process.
All right, Jane, thank you. And the website, if you type in UW Health,
yes.
UW Hospitals and Clinics, maybe? I'm not positive. I think it is. We'll post it on the Larry Mueller Show, WPR.org/Larry. We'll post it up there. But if you just type in UW Health or UW Hospitals, it's probably going to come up on your search.
Yeah. you could Google lung transplant. Here is the website is uwhealth.org/treatments/lung transplant. And in the top right corner is where patients can click on to submit a referral.
All right. Jane, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. We'll post that on our site as well. Somebody else wondered, how healthy are the average person's lungs?
That's a great question. So obviously, in order to be an organ donor, all organ donors go through a battery of testing to ensure that their organs are healthy enough for transplant. Everybody's organs have a little bit of wear and tear from their life experiences, whether they lived in a city or more rural in terms of what they're breathing in. But there is a lot of testing, both invasive and non-invasive, to make sure that those organs are healthy for transplant.
Hmm. What is and I'm going to ask this of both of you, but let's take lung transplants just because we've been talking about them more recently here. Are there lung transplants for children? Or what's the difference between transplants for adults and children?
Yeah, so pediatric lung transplant, fortunately, is much less common in general. The need in that population isn't as great. It's typically a disease that develops more with aging. There are some unique conditions in the very, very young, so infancy, due to congenital issues, either genetic or anatomical. And those are quite unique. The second population is children who either have cystic fibrosis or develop interstitial lung disease. There's kind of a third population that's becoming more common when adolescents develop what's called ARDS, which is a big inflammatory reaction in their lungs, typically to an infection such as influenza or another virus. And that can cause lung failure where they suddenly get really sick and then need a transplant. At UW Health, we do adolescent lung transplants, so typically age 12 on up, in order to provide access to the adolescent population.
Dr. Oderico, what about on the pancreas side?
Yes, yeah, Larry. So we are one of six programs in the nation that provides pediatric transplants for all of the solid organ transplants. And so we've performed pediatric pancreas transplants. But again, as Dr. Lowry said, it's relatively rare and only less than one a year, basically. So just a handful over the years. And over the course of the 30 years or so of 2000 total pancreas transplants, nearly, that we've performed at the University of Wisconsin, only a handful for pediatric patients, and most of those in adolescents. And it has to do with the fact of if they, the particular adolescent, due to a variety of reasons, cannot handle the technology and are really running into harm's way with regard to severe hypoglycemic events, 911 calls, ER visits, EMT calls, seizures, accidents, those sorts of things are indications to then we get a pancreas transplant. So the control of our blood sugars is automatic. We don't need technology. We don't need to monitor our blood sugars. That's the goal, is to completely eliminate insulin, normalize the hemoglobin A1C, get rid of the technology, and have the freedom to eat and drink and travel wherever one and whatever one wants to do. So that can be life-changing for an adolescent as well. But the downside is a lifetime of anti-rejection medicines. So the stakes are a little bit higher with regard to the risks of long-term immunosuppression, but the outcomes can be excellent and can really give freedom to those patients in terms of cure of diabetes.
Well, it's nice to know that it's rare in both cases with the lungs and with the pancreas. But it's also nice to know that if it's your child that has one of those conditions, it can be taken care of, which is great, great news, or it can be at least. Dr. Aaron Lowry, Medical Director of the UW Health Lung Transplant Program, one of our guests. The other, Dr. John Oderico, General Surgeon at UW Health, specializing in kidney, pancreas, and islet transplant surgeries. And again, you can call numbers 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at lung transplants and also at pancreas and eye transplant surgeries with our guests today, Dr. John Oderico from UW Health and Dr. Aaron Lowry, Medical Director of the UW Health Lung Transplant Program. A listener couldn't stay with us. They're wondering, what can you do to prepare before an organ transplant? It might be different depending. Dr. Oderico, start with you.
Yeah, a great question, because it's so important that, let's call it prehabilitation, is so important for successful outcomes. So healthy living, healthy eating, and exercise to get as fit as possible. Good blood sugar control in the case of diabetes is specifically important to avoid or minimize the risk of infections after transplant. So, getting the education and knowledge about what to expect and how to manage anti-rejection medicines and what to other aspects of care mm-hmm. post-transplant. So getting some education and getting fitter, essentially.
Yeah. Dr. Lowry?
Yeah, I cannot overemphasize what Dr. Oderico just said, which is to get strong enough for the surgery. Exercise is so important to prepare for the lung transplant surgery. And so enrolling in pulmonary rehab and really listening to what they say and taking that to your everyday, trying to do that exercise. Exercise is really hard when you have advanced lung disease and you're on oxygen, for sure. But you can't improve the lungs, but you can improve how the muscles use oxygen. And it helps to make patients feel better once they get over that initial hump of getting back into exercise. They actually feel a little bit better. And going into the surgery, they will be much stronger. Having a diet that is good nutrition, as well as mental health support and support from friends and family, are also very, very important to the success of the transplant. And you want to make sure that you're up to date on all of your routine health maintenance items. So things like vaccines, colonoscopy screens, dental care, making sure that you're doing all of those things so that you're as healthy as possible going into that surgery.
Yeah, all good points. Jim in Ripon, the Green Lake area, has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Larry, I'm a alpha-1 antitrypsin patient who is a ZZ. And so I'm 70 years old, and you reach a point when your lung function decreases where you sort of have to make a decision on which path do you take. So in the ZZ world, my FEV1 now is about 8.8, which will mean something to the doctor. But it seems to me if you go the route of a lung transplant, you can be trading off for one benefit, but taking some other dynamics on that you aren't dealing with currently. And I'm just wondering, from the doctor's perspective, how do you determine what's the best path to take?
That is a a fantastic question. And I think really knowledge is power, right? So you're in the driver's seat as the patient, and you should consider meeting with the lung transplant team, but also the palliative care team to understand the path ahead and the different decisions that need to be made, and understand, you know, what are your goals? What are your aims in the time that you have left? And the decision will become much more clear once you understand what is involved with both pathways.
So sit down with both. You need to sit down with both. And so it'd be two different teams, I guess.
Yeah, it would be two different teams. But I think to make it simple, just, you know, you can meet with the lung transplant team to understand what is all involved with lung transplant to better understand, is it the right path for you in your case?
Jim, good luck, and thank. I'm sorry for your situation, but thank you so much for calling, and good luck with your future treatments. Appreciate it very much. What kind of need is there for organ donors in Wisconsin? How are we as a state when it comes to that? Dr. Lowry, we'll go to you. What do you think?
So,
I'm sure it could be better, but
it can always be better. And so it's important that when people are thinking about transplant, thinking about the other side of that, you know, if there is a situation where you can consider being a donor, there are living donors for things like kidney transplant. And then there is also deceased donors. And so what is important, the donors have so generously given life to our patients. And in many instances, it has resulted from a tragic situation into something that is some good and such a precious gift to so many people around the country. And so what people should do if they are considering being an organ donor, register as an organ donor, sign your license, let your friends and family know this is what you want to do. This is part of your life and who you are and what you want to do, and you're not here and able to speak for yourself.
And I can tell you, as someone who's had a cornea transplant from a donor and a bone marrow transplant in my finger from a different donor, I'm a 3-in-1 kind of person here. I really appreciate and have appreciated very much the sacrifices of those folks, and a chance to be able to write letters anonymously to recipients and thank them for their donations was something I was really more than happy to do. And you folks are doing some wonderful work here. We should be so proud of what we have with these transplants. And I want to thank you both very, very much for the work you do and for being with us today. Thank you both very, very much. Appreciate it. Dr. Aaron Lowry, Medical Director of the UW Health Lung Transplant Program, and Dr. John Odorico, General Surgeon at UW Health, specializes in kidney, pancreas, and islet transplant surgeries. Great to have them with us. And we're great to have a great team of people here on the show to produce these programs. Our producers, Clara Kniper, Joel Patnott, our technical directors Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive producer Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.